Hey, good morning, traders. Today is Tuesday, August 27th, 2019. I'm JD, your mobile trader, and this is the Mobile Trader Podcast. Hey guys, I'm checking in with you from Springfield, Missouri. Today's episode will be an intro to options training. So go ahead and grab your pen and paper and let's get ready to go. See you in a second. Welcome back to the Mobile Trader Podcast and our introduction to options training. Okay, guys, let's get started. But first, let me read this important disclaimer. Options involve risks and are not suitable for everyone. Options trading can be speculative in nature and carry substantial risk of loss. Now that that's out of the way, guys, one of the things that we can control is our exposure to this loss, and I will discuss that further in there. So let's not kind of worry about that so far, but you do need to know that we're stepping into a new realm and there's risk associated with this. Okay, guys, I want to give you my background, my story. Probably in around 2006, I began trading. I had been investing probably since the 90s, just as a young guy, buying different shares of stock, but it was a tougher road to investing during that period. But my options training occurred around the 2006 2006 date, and one of my instructors suggested that I learn how to short stocks or learn options and study puts. And it didn't click at the time, but he mentioned that there was something brewing in the financial markets. And little did I know that it was the crisis, the mortgage crisis, the Big Short. So during that time, around March of 2007, I had been studying. I had actually become fairly comfortable. I had been paper trading for probably a year, and I went live. And I went live right as we were stepping into the financial crisis. But I was ready. I was headed, you know, I was almost looking at a short bias. So what I ended up doing, I spotted, I guess, a trend, and I picked up on some signals that Lehman and Bear Stearns, their charts were bearish, no pun. And I shorted Lehman and I shorted Bear Stearns and I bought puts, and I was probably averaging $1,200 every morning until Lehman finally went down to just nothing. They would go down, bounce back up, I'd buy more puts. And that was my introduction to it, and I was able to actually survive during that period, during the financial crisis, just with options trading, and I fell in love with it. Then I saw the movie, The Big Short, and realized when I'm doing 1,200 in the morning, the guys at those other financial houses or trading firms, they were in the hundreds of thousands and millions, you know. So it's basically position sizing, but we need to learn the nuts and bolts of how to trade. Or actually, let's go into what is an options contract. I'm going to read you the definition of this. It's from Wikipedia. An options contract is an agreement between two parties to facilitate a potential transaction on the underlying security at a preset price, referred to as the stock price, prior to the expiration date. We'll get into that a little bit further, but when they say underlying security, an option is attached to a particular security, which whether it's a stock, a commodity, or go to real estate, we have an option to buy. The underlying security is the house or the property itself. So the contract basically governs, gives us that option. It's not the obligation, but the option. So as we move further, underlying security is one maybe a term that you should write down, and it's also a reference to when you enter into an options trade. You'll see options traders they'll detail their trade, and they say, I'll kind of go down a strike price. I got into the 150 September 150 Roku calls, and the underlying was 143. When they say underlying, they're referring to the stock price itself. That particular options contract may have cost them $4 per contract. I'll go a little further in that down the road. But underlying security. Okay, the two types of contracts that we're going to focus on, we're going basic directional, basic options, and we're going puts and calls. I know most of you have heard those terms, and it kind of catches you off guard. Puts and calls, both of which can be purchased to speculate on the direction of stocks or stock indexes, or they can be sold to generate income. But we're focusing on buying a put or buying a call. We're not looking at selling. That gets a little more intricate. So for stock options, a single contract covers 100 shares of the underlying stock. Remember that's going to be, we're leveraging ourselves, but they can't take more than we put on the line. So don't worry about that aspect of it. So for stock options, a single contract covers 100 shares of the underlying stock. So when you see someone, you'll see a contract that says you can buy the Roku shares, a Roku option strike of 148 for $1.15. It's not really $1.15. It is, but you have to multiply that by 100. So you're looking at $115 to control that contract. So you might see an 86-cent options contract. It's 86 cents, but then you multiply by your 100 and you're looking at $86. That's still reasonably priced, but that's just kind of a quick way to put it. And just remember that the 100 shares represents every options contract from what we're dealing with. So today, guys, we're going to focus on just basic directional plays, and we're utilizing the long call and the long put. So those are the terms, the two terms we're looking at, calls and puts. But we're going to just remember the first part of it is the long call and the long put. Okay, guys, an option is a contract giving the buyer the right, but not the obligation, to buy or sell an underlying asset at a specific price on or before a certain date. Investors use options for income, to speculate, and to hedge risk. So if you own shares of, let's go with Boeing. If you own shares of Boeing and you're heavily, have a strong position in Boeing, which many, many investors have, and Boeing was selling off, going through turmoil, you could purchase a protective put. And so let's say the value of your position in Boeing is declining. When it declines, that put that you purchase, it increases in value. So you're supplementing that decline in the value with another instrument that kind of protects it hedges your position. So that's where options come into play. The speculative side, that's where we're looking. It's almost like we're making a call on it. And hey, I feel this stock is going to increase in value. I'm going to buy a call. Or I feel it's going to decline. I'm speculating that stock price is showing me, you know, its price is going to fall off into a certain level. Let's buy a put. Or other investors, very savvy investors, they sell options contracts. I want you to think about both sides of the trade. There's a buyer and there's always a seller. The market maker is in the middle, but the sellers of the option, they can play the casino. They're the house, basically. So that's something that you can study a little bit further down the road. It's an interesting dovetail on from the basic strategy, but you also have to have the right amount of capital and be in the right position to step into that arena. Okay, guys, options are derivatives because they derive their value from an underlying asset. We talked about that previously. A call gives the holder the right to buy an asset at a certain price within a specific period of time. A put gives the holder the right to sell an asset at a certain price within a specific period of time. Guys, what we're doing, I know you have heard about flipping houses. So I see a property that's market value of fair market value $100,000. I get it under contract for 70, you know, so I'm in there at 70,000, pretty much 70% of the fair market value. I have that property under contract. 90 days to close, and I find another investor who wants to get into that property and rehab it. I flip the contract for $2,000. I'm out of the deal. Hands clean. That's the same with options. You know, we'll go a little further, but that's kind of a correlation to that. So let's go to the next one. The price at which an underlying stock can be purchased or sold is called the strike price. Write that down. Strike price. The total cost of an option is called the premium. Write that down. So we have underlying or underlying security, strike price, and premium. That's the cost of that options contract. And it's determined by factors including the stock price, strike price, and time value remaining until expiration. Because options contracts, they don't just go on in perpetuity. There's an expiration. DTE, days to expiration. That is key. DTE. A stock options contract typically represents 100 shares of the underlying stock, as we mentioned earlier. We can use a small amount of capital. This is what I like, guys. A lot of times, I'm not a day trader, I'm a swing trader, which means I try to hold the options contract between one full day to a week, sometimes up to 3 weeks. I'm looking forward to make a move over a certain period of time. If I wanted to do a day trade or an active trade within the with stock, you need that 25,000 baseline just to hold value, just so you don't become flagged as a pattern day trader. So in the options market now, I'm a fan of investing, guys, but this is a second caveat, or actually another particular strategy where we're looking at generating income while we're investing for long term. But these are short term holds that we're looking at. So during this period, we can use a small amount of capital to control a larger amount of an asset, and we have the ability to dictate our downside exposure. That's big. If I can't afford to trade 100 shares of Amazon, but I can get into a couple of calls of Amazon for much less and control that, and also hop in and out. I can dictate when the amount of risk I want to take. The only negative is that you don't own the stock itself. We're flipping. It's flipping that house, flipping the contract. And then if you build up your income or build up your nest egg or whatever you want to have, go ahead and buy your shares, because you also want to build that long-term position as well if you really like the company. So the next thing that we're going to do is when you want to predetermine your risk to reward. When you hop into a trade, you want to say, hey, I'm willing to risk. Let's say you bought a contract for $3. So that's $300 on the line. You're willing to risk 20%. So you're going to look at $60 for a chance to make 40%, you know, or give or take, depending on the market. But your risk reward, you want to predetermine, like, look, man, I'm willing to risk $30 at the most on this, or $60, and I'm going to try to make 120. I'm going to try to make 1-to-1, but you really want to go, you want to be 1-to-1.5 or even bigger on your risk to reward. We can talk about that later. I'm kind of digging into like how to make the trade and just how to protect ourselves, guys. And we're protecting ourselves by setting stops or a stop loss. But a disclaimer on this now, a lot of us trade with Robinhood. On the option side, Robinhood does not offer the option to preset your stop loss. So you have to have a certain level of discipline to say, when it gets to this point, I'm getting the hell out of this contract because I'm not risking any more than that. But a lot of times when the market is moving, you're going to like, oh, man, you know what? I don't want to sell. It's going to go back up. It may, but you're going to have to learn. Trader psychology is going to be key if you're using Robinhood to trade options. My suggestion is to get to a traditional broker to trade the options that gives you the option to, utilize certain stops, stop loss, catastrophic stops, trailing stops. And you can also set limit orders to where if you're at work and it hits a particular profit goal, the trade will automatically trigger and take you right out of there. You know, that kind of thing. So if you're not a full-time trader, guys, it makes sense to be able to set these stops and put it on autopilot, because we're forced to set mental stops. And I'm adamantly against mental stops if you're not just an expert trader or a highly disciplined individual. But I mean, in the beginning stages of trading options, that's a tough call, man. That's tough. Only the most disciplined guy or family individual, just, you know, if it's tough to not talk yourself out of getting, you know, when the market goes live, it's live, it's moving. That's your money on the line. That's lunch money. That's how my wife says it, from the country. That's cold drink money. You know, that's diaper money. If you're trading, if foolishly trading money you need. So we're going to use money that is not going to be missed at this point. So preferably we're paper trading. Preferably we're using a virtual trader until we can consistently see gains and consistently follow a trading plan. Okay, guys, just remember, we're looking at stop losses, discipline. There's times, I mean, something comes up and you have to go to the restroom, phone call, this and that. In the market, you go to the restroom and you end up missing something. A tweet comes out. The market, I mean, it's a flash sell-off, and you never know. I mean, little Johnny's braces money is eaten up by the market, and you're like, oh, man, they got me. It's on us. So a hard stop that would have been preset would have protected us from losing the majority of our investment. Okay, guys, onto another word of caution. We will only use limit orders when opening an options trade. The other option is a market order, and that leaves us at the mercy of the market maker. Write that name down, market maker. He's an individual, he or she is an individual who lines up the buyers and sellers on both sides of the trade, but they make their money in the middle because there's a spread in there. And so if we put a market order in, that market maker will fill us at the highest price possible. You know, you try to get in low, sell high. He'll make that. If the spread is $2, it'll put it up to the higher part of it. We'll get into that a little bit further, but just remember, we do not use market orders to enter a trade. The market maker survives in the space between the bid and the ask. I want you guys to look up bid and ask. Kind of research that, because those are key components, whether it's options or commodities or Forex. Well, I don't know about Forex with pips, but you know, bid and ask are key. And so the market maker makes his money with the spread, and he'll fill us right at the ask, which is the higher of the two. You know, both sides of the trade, there's someone on the other side who is selling the option. We have supply and demand, and we need volatility to inflate the premium. So volatility is our friend when it comes to options, because that pops that options premium, or that price of that contract takes off. The volatility will inflate the premium, and volume provides liquidity. You don't want to get stuck in a deal. I mean, if you might have picked the right particular stock, it moves in the right way, and the option is, you find an option that's pretty cheap, you hop in it, and realize that the volume on that particular stock is very low, and it's not going to be a liquid. You're not going to make it out of there. The liquidity is poor, and it's terrible when you get stuck in there. The spreads widen, and sometimes you just have to get out of the loss at any way possible. So we're looking for volatility to inflate the premium. You don't want to hop in after volatility has jumped in, and we need volume. We need liquidity. So the volume is on the stock itself, the underlying. I try to go for at least 500,000 or greater average daily volume. I really like the millions, you know. So One of the most liquid stocks you're going to see is the ETF, the SPY, S-P-Y. That's a lot. That's something to practice on. The moves are pretty clean. So, and the contracts are priced, they're priced very reasonably. So guys, what we don't want is a slow moving option that has no volume and we're stuck bag holding. We may have bought enough time, days to expiration, because you pay for time. The further out, let's say if you think a stock is going to move in the pot, gain in value, and you say, you know what, let's look 3 months out. The further you go out, the higher the price of the contract is, because it's going to give you more time for that option to travel in the direction that you believe, or the stock to move where you're predicting. But as I say that, there's something that comes into play, and we're going to talk about this when we kind of get into the exact layout of the options pricing, foundation. But there's something called the Greeks, and there's something that I want you to write down. It's called theta, T-H-E-T-A. Theta is time decay, and that's very key. So you think we can just kind of hold that option until that stock reaches that particular level that we're looking for. Theta comes into play. Time decay is what kind of eats into our option each day that it's out there. We don't need to know much else about theta. Just know that it eats into the value of our options. Okay, guys. I know I'm going deep. This is something a lot to chew on, but it's very important. The next one, we're going to talk about what is an option premium. An option premium is the income received by an investor who sells or writes an option contract to another party. An option premium may also refer to the current price of any specific options contract that has yet to expire. For stock options, the premium is quoted as a dollar amount per share, and most contracts represent the commitment of 100 shares. So when we're looking at option premium, that's basically the price of that options contract that we're looking at. Understanding option premium. Investors who write, which means to sell in this case, calls or puts, use option premiums as a source of current income. We talked about that briefly. Let's go a little bit further. Option prices are quoted on an exchange such as the Chicago Board Options Exchange, the CBOE. They're considered premium as a rule because the options themselves have no underlying value. So basically, they're applying a value to this. It's not a made up value, but we can also look for arbitrage or anomalies in options pricing. That's a little bit further out, but there's ways to, we can outpace the system if we do it right. So for future reference, there's a subgroup of traders who make their living writing options, or simply strategically selling options and collecting that premium. It's speculative, and I suggest that you have a mentor who actively practices this strategy if you are interested. So the components of an option premium include its intrinsic value. We'll write these terms down. Intrinsic value, I'll go back. So the components of an option premium include its intrinsic value, its time value, and the implied volatility of the underlying asset. So intrinsic value, INTRINSIC value, the abbreviation is IV, and that's implied volatility. Excuse me, we'll go a little further, but intrinsic value, that's very key. Time value and implied volatility, that's IV. As the option nears its expiration date, the time value will edge closer and closer to zero. $0, basically. So time is ticking, and it eats into the value of your options contract. So if you bought it at $3 or $1, you could, and theta was 8 cents, it might be up to 14 cents, and it just ticks away. And then the market maker, because a lot of times if it doesn't appear that move is going to occur for your strike, your option, that value deflates rapidly. When I say within the next, it expires on Friday, and we're looking at Wednesday, it might be a done deal unless there's a heavy catalyst that pushes price up there and then bumps that implied volatility back up. So while the intrinsic value will closely represent the difference between the underlying security's price and the strike price of the contract. So let me go a little bit further so I can give you guys a little more clarity on that. The main factors of an option premium, main factors affecting an option's price are the underlying security's price, moneyness, useful life of the option, and implied volatility. As the price of the underlying security changes, the option premium changes. So the price of the option is directly tied to the underlying securities movement. But I'll go a little further into it, but it doesn't go tick for tick. It doesn't go par for par unless we go with what we call a higher delta, D-E-L-T-A. The delta is one of the key, it's one of my key, I guess, components of what I look for when I trade options as well. So let's go a little further right now. As the price of the underlying security changes, the option premium changes. As underlying security's price increases, the premium of a call option increases, but the premium of a put option decreases. As the underlying security's price decreases, the premium of a put option increases, and the opposite is true for call options. So if I say that McDonald's is going to rise in price, I buy calls, bought it for $1, the price heads up, that call might bounce up to $1.50 in value. Let's say I'm same stock, McDonald's. I'm betting that McDonald's is going to go down in the short term. I buy a put, so I buy a long put. The stock price declines. That put value that I bought for $1, it increases in value, so it goes up to $1.50 or whatever. So you want your contract, the premium on your options contract, to increase in value, whether it's a call or a put. You still would like for that. You need the stock to operate in the direction that you want it, but the value of your options contract, you want that to increase. Okay, guys, the next one, it's called, now, with this is taken from Investopedia.com, this particular section, the phrase, the moneyness. So the moneyness affects the options premium because it indicates how far away the underlying security price is from the specified strike price. As an option becomes further in the money, the option premium normally increases. Conversely, the option premium decreases as the option becomes further out of the money. For example, as an option becomes further out of the money, the option premium loses intrinsic value, and the value stems primarily from the time value. So guys, I'm going to give you a little more detail on this with in the money, out of the money, intrinsic value, and time value. Let's go to the next section, and I'll promise I'll go a little further. What is a call option? Call options are agreements that give the option buyer the right, but not the obligation, to buy a stock, bond, commodity, or other instrument at a specified price within a specific time period. The stock, bond, or commodity is called the underlying asset. We went over that. I just wanted to kind of hammer home again. There is a direct connection between our options value and the price action on the underlying stock. A call buyer profits when the underlying stock or asset increases in price. Basics of a call option. We talked about the call. We have the right to buy 100 shares of an underlying stock at a specific price. And that price is known as the strike price. Strike price. That's the strike. You say, you know what, I'm in the September 150 strikes or September 150 calls, the strike, you know, the strike price is 150. When it says expiration date, when you look at it's called an options chain. That's just a listing of all the available options of that underlying asset. One of the things you look for is DTE, not GTD, Tommy. Anyway, DTE, days to expiration. That's a key component of it. And a lot of times, guys, we want to try to get at least, I like 30, 60, and 90 days out. The way this market is going right now in 2019, 14 days is, I'm kind of looking at that. The pricing is right because the carry through is not there right now. So maybe not 60 and 90 days. It can get a little pricey, but if you're a long-term holder of something, of a particular stock, and you want to kind of double down with it, yeah, the 60 and 90 day option expirations are, you know, that's going to give you some time for your option to make a move. So for example, a single call option contract may give a holder the right to buy 100 shares of Apple stock at $100 up until the expiry or expiration date in 3 months. There are many expiration dates and strike prices for traders to choose from. As the value of Apple stock goes up, the price of the options contract goes up and vice versa. The call option buyer may hold the contract until the expiration date, at which point they can take delivery of the 100 shares of stock or sell the options contract at any point before the expiration date at the market price of the contract at the time. A lot of times, guys, we're not taking delivery of those the particular asset. We're flipping that contract. Now, if you want to take delivery of it, you'll notify your broker and you'll have to have the funds to buy the 100 shares at the strike price that you purchased it at. So that's something to take note of. Let's go to the next section. I want to go over what is in the money, out of the money, things like that. Okay. In the money. In the money is a term connected to an options contract. In the money indicates that the option value in a strike price favorable, okay, it indicates that the option has value in a strike price favorable in comparison to the prevailing market price of the underlying asset. I don't like the way they explain that one, but an in the money call option means the option holder has the opportunity to buy the security below its current market price. So if I'm looking at the I'll go back to McDonald's again and just kind of an arbitrary number of 100. I'm looking at the September $100 or 100 strike McDonald's call options, and McDonald's is trading at 102. I'm in the money because I can purchase I can purchase 100 shares of that McDonald's stock at $100 and immediately have a profit of $2, you know, because the stock is currently trading at 102. So I'm in the money immediately. Those premiums are a little bit more pricey and the delta is higher. A delta might be 85 up to right at one. I'll go further into it. And in the money put option means the option holder can sell the security above its current price. You know how we want that stock price to go down when we buy a put? Let's say we buy the $100 put, $100 strike for McDonald's, and we want it down, and the option is, the stock is actually trading at 96. I'm in the money on that put because I'm in above where the stock price is currently. It's inverse of what that call is. So, and guys, you can look that up and get a little more clarity on that, and I'll keep going. But an option that is in the money does not necessarily mean the trader is making a profit on the trade. The expense of buying the option and any commission fees must also be considered. Now, one thing that we want to understand is that price does not have to reach your strike price in order to be profitable. Ideally, you want to outperform your commissions on both ends. You know, it might be $4.95 or $6.95 to open it and close the deal on both ends, and then the spread. But you, as the stock price moves in the direction of where you're predicting, the value of your options contract will increase incrementally. and it depends on the delta, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But you don't have, it doesn't have to, let's say you buy an out of the money. I'll talk about out of the money a little later, but the stock is trading, McDonald's is trading at $100. And you say, I'm going to buy a November $105 call, the November 105 strike. I'm $5 away. And it's at like 101.35. And I'm like, man, am I going to get the money? Is it going to make it to 105? Well, as it creeps up and pulls back and creeps up, the value of that options contract will increase. It doesn't have to reach 105, and at any point before that or before it reaches that, you could flip the contract because you're in a liquid position, and the value's there. It does not have to just perfectly hit 105. I mean, it's great when it does, and it's great when it surpasses it, but on its way up, if you reach a profit goal or a target, hop out and move on. The velocity of money is something that we need to work on as well, too. So here's the next one. A call option is in the money if the market price is above the strike price. We talked about that. A put option is in the money if the market price, which is market price is the current trading price, is below the strike price. We're looking for a decrease in value. An option can also be out of the money or at the money. In the money options contracts have higher premiums. Like I said, they have higher premiums than other options that are not in the money. So basically when you're in the money, that premium is going to be more expensive because you're buying right into profit. So it's like when you buy a home and you walk into equity, you're walking into equity with an in-the-money options contract. Here's some other considerations, guys. When the strike price and the market price of the underlying security are equal, now this is called an at-the-money. The option is called at-the-money when the strike price and the underlying security price are on par, you know. So options can be out of the money, meaning the strike price is not favorable to the market price. An out of the money call option would have a higher strike. And conversely, the out of the money put option would have a lower strike. And we need price to reach go in the direction of our particular out of the money call or put. As a result, out-of-the-money options usually have lower premiums, much lower premiums than the in-the-money options. And also, there's more risk associated with that as well, too. But we can work on that. Okay, guys, let's go to time decay. I'm going to revisit that briefly. Time decay is a measure of the rate of decline in the value of an options contract due to the passage of time. Time decay accelerates as an option's time to expiration draws closer, since there's less time to realize a profit from the trade. Time decay is also called theta and is known as one of the options Greeks, G-R-E-E-K-S, the Greeks. Other Greeks include delta, gamma, vega, and rho, and these formulas help assess the risk inherent with an options trade, but the ones we're going to focus on delta and theta, okay? DST, anyway. Okay, guys, time decay is the silent killer. We've talked about that. Theta is just, it eats into that premium. Let's go to the date, expiration dates, and what they represent. The expiration date for a listed stock option in the U.S. is normally the third Friday of the contract month, or the month that the contract expires. So write this down, front month. If they say, are you trading the front month option? That refers to the current month that you're in. So we're looking at the traditional option, the monthly options. They normally expire the third Friday of the option contract month, or the month that the contract expires. So if it's 3 months out, November the November 100s or whatever, we're looking at that third Friday. That's for the traditional options. There's also weeklies now. So on months that the Friday falls on the holiday, the expiration date is on the Thursday immediately before the third Friday. Once an options or futures contract passes its expiration date, the contract is invalid. The last day to trade equity options is the Friday prior to expiration. Therefore, traders must decide what to do with their options by this last trading day. Expiration date for derivatives is the date on which the derivatives are valid. So depending on the type of derivative, which is another word for option, option falls under that. The expiration date can result in different outcomes. Option owners can choose to exercise the option and realize profits or losses, or let it expire worthless. And that you don't have to do anything at the end because it might be at your option value. You look in your trading account and it says that the contract is worth $0. You can just let that, you can let it just float on, and you don't have to close it out or anything. Don't have to worry about anything. It's just gonna, it'll just kind of cancel itself, and you move on. It'll be an automatic closing of that. Futures contract owners can choose to roll over the contract, but we're not going to talk about that. The next part is the exercising of an option. It's not something that we're looking at doing in this study or this introduction. But an option holder may exercise his right to buy or sell the contract's underlying shares at a specific price, also called the strike price. The idea is that you just contact your broker and say you want to exercise that. And the broker will initiate an exercise notice, and it informs the seller that, you know, or the writer of the contract, that you're exercising the option. That's just something to really study, and if you're really looking to get into it. But let's not even go down that route right now. But the majority of options contracts are not exercised, but they expire worthless. They're allowed to expire worthless, or most of those contracts, we're flipping them. So that's the whole thing. That's one of the ideas, guys. It's getting kind of long, but I want to really, really focus and give you guys enough detail. So we're going to go back over some quick basics. One of the fast facts again, guys, no market orders. We are not entering on a market order. We enter on a limit order. You pick a price that you want to get in, and you stick to it and live with it. Like I said, the market makers are the guys who set they kind of line up the buyers and sellers. Market makers make their living by buying at the bid and selling at the ask. So they're going to buy at the lowest part of it. They're going to sell at the higher end, and they're going to set that spread up. And the spread is the price, the gap between the bid and the ask. Preferably, you'd like it at 25 cents or better, which when I say better, lower than 25 cents. But a lot of times when it's hot and it's volatile, that spread can be it might be $1.50, $2 spread. Watch Tesla sometimes when stuff is going crazy. You can't find a you can't find a tight spread, and you want a tight spread because that provides liquidity. You can get in and out, and people are trying to move, and a buyer is trying to meet a seller on common ground. So you want a tight spread, 25 cents or better. But if you really like it, you think it's going to move, you know, 50 cents is cool, but you have to overcome that spread, because right when you hop in, you know, you're going to get in at the higher end of that, like on the ask, and it's going to immediately, when you try to sell, it's you're not going to be able to sell at that price. You're going to lose 50 cents in value. It's going to put you at the back, you know, on the back side of that particular spread. So you don't want to have a big time gap to have to overcome right as you enter into that options contract. Retail investors have a better chance of getting filled if we buy at the ask and sell at the bid. It's a faster fill, it's a faster move. So tighter spreads doesn't eat into our potential profit. Another fast fact, guys, option prices can be set or modeled mathematically. That's how they kind of establish what the price is. You know, the most common model is the Black-Scholes model. Black Scholes, S-C-H-O-L-E-S, model. It's used to determine the fair price or theoretical value for a call or put option. And the variables that affect price in this particular model are volatility, the type of option, underlying stock price, time, the strike price, and the risk-free rate. Let's go a little further in, guys. Go back to the basics really quick. Long call. An option position that profits if the price of the underlying stock rises. Long put. Now, I'm saying long before these because we're saying that we're buying the long call and the put. Because some people, you can short a put and you can short a call. So that just long call, long put. But people just say, you know, calls and puts. So a long put is a position that profits if the price of the underlying stock or underlying asset falls. Your downside risk is limited to the cost of the options contract. You cannot lose any more than what you pay for that particular contract. And then you can cap that the amount that you're willing to risk, you know, by saying if I paid $100 for that contract, I'm willing to risk $40. So you can get out with a $40 loss, or you go in with whatever the gain is. The often overlooked skill is stock selection. You know, I'm a technical trader. I look at news, but I look at charts, I look at trends, I look at momentum. Guys, you have to be correct about the direction of the move. And then we need the move to occur within our expiration parameters. We need the move. Sometimes you get to the party too early. You're helping them set up chairs and the party doesn't get jumping. I mean, Lauryn Hill is going to sing that night, you know, and Erykah Badu, and they're going to show up at the back end of it. And you get a little sleepy and you're out of there. Go home. Everybody says, oh, man, you should have seen it. They did it. It was the best I've ever seen. You pick the right location, you pick the right concert and the right artist, but the time frame is wrong. So we need to fall into the right time frame. So you need to, you know, if we want to buy time, that's key. The price or premium that is paid for the options contract consists of intrinsic value, guys. Okay, intrinsic value is the difference between the underlying price and the strike price of the option. So let's say the price of the of McDonald's is 102, and I bought that $100 strike. I have $2 in intrinsic value off top. Now, the contract's going to cost more than that. So another part of it that is calculated into it is time value. That's calculated by subtracting the intrinsic value from the options premium. So we know it's $2 of intrinsic value. That premium might be $3. So time value is $1, or that's extrinsic value. As investors are, you know, investors are willing to pay a higher premium for more time. That's paramount to understand that. The option market is one of the few arenas where we can buy time. We can literally buy time. You know, you can't buy time anywhere else, most likely, but the option market, if we need some time, you'll pay for it and you can get it. Okay. Additional options terms, when you read an options table, this is what you want to kind of pay attention to when we're selecting an option. We've picked the stock, we've picked the direction. Now we need to understand that options table. We won't discuss all the Greeks, but we're focusing on delta and theta. Okay. First one, volume. This is on the options table. That's the amount of contracts that were traded during the latest session. A lot of times it's going to be somewhat low unless you're like with Apple or Google or Amazon. The bid is the latest price that someone is willing to buy that contract for. We're talking options contract. The ask is the latest price that someone is willing to sell a particular option for, or options contract for. IV, or implied volatility, that's the expected future uncertainty of price, direction, and speed. And you can imply volatility is a, I don't know, it's a formulated, it's almost a market maker's best guess or best assessment of how volatile or how much velocity is going to be behind a move of that particular price. You want implied volatility to come in once you purchase your particular contract, because once implied volatility spikes, the premium of that particular contract spikes, and that's good. As you going into an event or pending news might cause a spike, anytime that something might be a worldwide event that occurs, that affects implied volatility. Okay, guys, open interest. Open interest indicates the total number of contracts that have been opened, and it adjusts as open trades are closed. You can look at the open interest when you're kind of looking through the option table. Unusual open interest is often an indicator of smart money or money moving into a particular stock preemptively. So that's something to look for, keep an eye out for. And they usually talk about that on CNBC, and a lot of people make their money, make some pretty good money following smart money where the open interest is really high or skewed. Here's another thing that I look for, guys. I consider myself a delta trader. So delta, when you say delta, you think probability of or chance, basically, which, you know, of your contract or the strike that you of the option that you're selecting, the probability of it being profitable. So that's the delta. So it comes, you know, it's going to be positive for calls, negative for puts. It might be a 40 delta, 50 delta, 55 delta. I like 70 delta or better or higher on the call side, and negative 70 delta for puts. It might be negative 0.70, or it might be 0.70, but I say 70 because I'm kind of removing the decimal. But also, if you go a little bit lower, down to 40, it's not that bad if you have the right amount of time and the right particular you select the right move, you know. So some view delta, and they use it as a percentage chance that an option has the percentage chance that an option has of expiring in the money. You would like for your option to expire in the money. The strike price and underlying stock price on par, basically. Okay, the higher the delta, when the stock moves, your stock price moves, you want your option price to move. But if your delta is low, it won't move as quickly. But the higher the delta, the closer to par, which is a tick-for-tick move, that's what you'll find. So if you get up to 75, 80, 85, 90, even when it's a 1 delta, which is really 100, if the stock price moves a dollar, the option moves a dollar. If the stock price moves 30 cents, it's pretty close to that a lot of times, all things being equal. Higher deltas bring higher premiums, though. A 1 delta is a 100% delta, and the option price will almost move on par with the underlying tick for tick. Theta, aka time decay, we've talked about that. It's the value that indicates how much value an option will lose with the passage of 1 day of trading. Time is the known absolute. It's the enemy. Okay, guys, strike price. The price at which the buyer of the option can buy or sell the underlying security if they choose to exercise this right. Those are like the key components of the options table. We're coming up on the hour mark, guys. We're like 53 minutes, but what I want you to do is you find a stock that you like, and the next thing you need to know, you need to look for the options chain, because every stock isn't optionable, but the majority of the large caps and the top ones in the S&P 500, the Nasdaq 30, they're going to have an optionable they'll have an options chain. You get in there and you find one that falls maybe at the money or one strike out of the money. And that's something to kind of test out, guys. I'm not going to give you a trading plan or a strategy, but I usually, when I'm really going well and my best, when I first started, I had the basically that it was an end of the day momentum play for an overnight hold. I would wait for like the last hour, the last 30 minutes of the day. I'd already have a stock that was in the right, the trending in the right direction, same as the with the market. And I maybe, let's see, I'd price a call, but I'd look for that stock to have some momentum running into the close. I'd find a 70 delta or higher. I'd buy one contract and let it go into the close, and then I would look to exit out the next morning. And it was a good move for me. I would have my risk reward set. I'd have my profit and loss in mind where I wanted. And if it pulled back on me, which, guys, it happens, you cut your losses quickly. Let your winners ride. You cut your losses quickly and move on. So, and that's one of the hardest things to do, is to cut that loss, because you're like, you know what, I don't want to take a loss. But if you take a small loss, your average win will eclipse that. So, guys, I hope this gave you some, you know, some good information. One of the things I want to tell you, to open a trade, now this is key, to open an options trade, it's called buy to open, BTO. And some of your trading platforms kind of have that out there, where, because there'll be other designations. So you need to remember BTO. I want to buy to open. I'm going to buy to open a call, a long call. And then you pick the particular strike price and the expiration. And when it's time to get out of it, it's going to be sell to close, STC. Don't open with a sell to close. You're going to open with a buy to open. You can buy to open a call, or you can buy to open a put. And then you sell to close that call, or you sell to close that put when it reaches your particular P&L, profit and loss. So, guys, hour-long options introduction right here. We can get a little further into it later on, but hopefully let's get started on virtual trading, paper trading. Learn how to use technical analysis to select the particular stock that is going to move, guys. Don't no guessing game, no favorites, no falling in love. This is a trade. We're looking at swing trading. We're looking at in and out, not just marrying that stock. You use that for your other portion of your portfolio. This particular section is going to be for the trading aspect. So hope you guys enjoyed. Let me know what you thought, like, comment, subscribe, and I'll see you next time.